Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touches it.
The doctor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. I hope everybody had a wonderful weekend, the last weekend of the decade, in fact. So, hope everybody had a good weekend. The Rockets went 1-1 over the weekend. So we'll talk first a little bit about the win against the Nets, 108-98, and then we'll get into the loss against the New Orleans Pelicans, 127-112. Now this Nets game, I mean, coming right out of the gate, the Rockets looked absolutely unguardable. Specifically, James Harden and Russell Westbrook looked unguardable. I mean, they had all of the Rockets' points all the way up until almost the tail end of the first quarter when Isaiah Hartenstein finally scored a bucket. I want to say they were leading the Nets by double-digit points, 34 to something, 34 to like 18 or whatever it was, and James had 22 of those points, Russ had 12 of them. It was just an impressive showing from those two guys. Really strong first quarter, and a lot of the reason behind that strong first quarter is because the Rockets were actually running a different offense than they normally do. They weren't ISOing as much. They weren't relying on just driving and kicking for these wide open threes. They were running more of a layered offense. They were getting points right at the rim. They were doing things like cutting off of back screens. And that first quarter, it was really impressive to watch. And we saw how potent their offense can be when they mix it up just a little bit. Obviously, the end goal for this Rockets offense under Mike D'Antoni is still to hit a large volume of three-pointers. That part's not going to change. But what they need to do is they need to be a little bit less predictable, and they need to actually factor in some other options into their offense. Now, as it stands right now, a lot of their offense is either James Harden or Russell Westbrook isolation plays. And then those isolation plays turn into potential opportunities for other players, depending on if it becomes an ISO into a drive or whatever it may be, especially with Russ. Russ tends to, you know, he'll drive and then kick. Well, James does it too. James will drive and then kick. But having different looks, you know, handing the ball off to the big at the three-point line, cutting to the basket, you know, things of that nature, you know, a little bit more off-ball movement rather than the same thing that we've seen for the majority of the season, it'll keep the defense honest. And the Nets actually switched it up after the first quarter, and then they started trapping James. They started with the double team on James Harden. And throughout the evening, we saw a bunch of different wrinkles as to how the Rockets, I guess, plan on handling this double team now, and it was pretty encouraging. And I think my favorite one throughout the evening was actually when Russ was sitting, and I don't want people to read into this thinking, oh, yep, Russ can't be. No, Russ can be part of the solution. But specifically, my favorite one was where James and Austin Rivers were actually basically running a 1-2 kind of, it wasn't a pick and roll, but they were running a 1-2 kind of screen right there at the top of the key. And they were using James as the screener because whoever was guarding Austin was basically hovering so close to James that as soon as Austin kind of floated the pass over the top to James, if the defender committed to James, James could just whip the pass right back to Austin, and it was either an open three or an open driving lane, and it was a quick pass because of the way that the defender had to angle himself between Austin and James. It wasn't like when James just brings the ball up the court and suddenly he has two defenders right in front of him, completely closing down all the passing lanes, where he has to throw this really high arching pass to get to whoever the open man is. And, you know, we've seen those passes all the time this season, where James walks it up and he's got to float a pass over two defenders to get it to whoever the open guy is, whether it's Russ, whether it's another one of the ball handlers. And that pass takes a while to get there because he has to throw it so high up over the defenders to ensure that nobody's going to snatch it out of the air. It gives the defense a chance to reset. But in this play where they're using James as the screener, because of the way the defense has to line up to guard him, the passes are quicker. And therefore, they can't get back into their half-court defense as quickly. And then, it gives Austin Rivers a quick driving lane. Or if Austin's man doesn't commit to James, or if another defender doesn't commit to James to trap him on this double team, then James gets to actually play one-on-one for, you know, 3 to 5 seconds. And we saw it a couple times. He caught the pass one time, drove it straight into the basket. He caught it and spun on a dime and just drove straight in. Caught it once, was able to work himself into his rhythm, get a step back three out of it. I think that that is a really unique way to kind of handle it because, again, it's James isn't the one bringing the ball up. So you're not immediately faced with this set of two defenders guarding him, and it allows him a chance to actually take part in the game. Now, James, again, was pretty hot to start the game against the Nets and kind of cooled off over the final three quarters. But again, that was in large part due to the fact that he still wasn't able to play his normal brand of basketball because he was still dealing with the double team. But it's encouraging to see how they're going to be handling it moving forward, because it's apparent that that's the only way to slow down James Harden is to actually commit a hardcore double team to him. Otherwise, he's going to torch your entire team. So he finished the night against the Nets, 44 points, 10 boards, 6 assists. He had a steal, had 3 blocks, shot 6 of 10 from 3-point range, just 4 of 9 from the charity stripe. James has been in a bit of a free throw shooting funk lately. Missed his only free throw attempt in the game prior to the Nets. Whatever he's got going on from the charity stripe, it's not all that great. Maybe it's his lack of visits there all of a sudden and he's lost his shooting touch, but he needs to get that part figured out. Westbrook finished the evening 23 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, had a steal, had a block. Clint Capella didn't play, and he also didn't play in the Pelicans game, suffering from that bruised right heel, kind of trying to get himself right. So Isaiah Hartenstein played in significant minutes. Tyson Chandler did start against the Nets, but Isaiah played 24 minutes, had 9 points, 13 rebounds, had an assist, had a steal. Rivers, 14 points, just a board, just an assist. Not a great evening from Rivers. 4 of 9 from the 3-point line, but, you know, didn't really fill up the stat sheet, I guess. But overall, that Nets game, you know, you build up leads of 22 points and 18 points at two different spots in the game, and you let the Nets get back into it. And that's not, look, these leads that the Rockets are building up and then suddenly losing, they're not the only team that does it. This isn't the 90s, this isn't the early 2000s anymore, this isn't even the early part of the decade. And leads just, they don't stay in the NBA. They constantly, you can go tune into any other game for any other team, and teams are constantly losing these double-digit leads, these impressive 20-plus point leads. Now, the concern is, yeah, you're going to lose the lead. Teams are going to go on runs. It's a game of runs. We hear it all the time. But the concern is when you do lose the leads, that you're not making the adjustments to get back into the game if the opposing team actually changes up their defense or changes up their offensive scheme, whatever it is, they're making changes to then trim these leads down. And the concern is the Rockets aren't making changes back to then build up another lead. We'll keep talking about the Nets win, and we'll get into the Pelicans loss here in just one moment, so don't go anywhere. All right, and we are back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Talking first about the Rockets' win against the Brooklyn Nets, 108-98, before we get into their loss against the New Orleans Pelicans, 127-112. Now, kind of continuing along that same thought at the end of segment one, you know, the Rockets, they lost those two big leads, and but they won this game with defense. You know, they lost their big leads. The Nets kind of pulled ahead at one point, and they held the Nets to just 6 points over the final, 7 minutes of game time. And we've seen them do this before. We saw them pitch a shutout against the Cleveland Cavs. We've seen them hold other teams to, you know, these long offensive droughts. And it's because they really key in when the game is on the line. And it's frustrating because you can see these stretches where the Rockets do play absolutely like stellar top five NBA defense, but that they can't play it consistently is the part that's frustrating. And it's not just, oh, the Nets were missing shots. No, the Rockets played great defense down the stretch. PJ Tucker, James Harden, even Russ a little bit. You know, the guys played great D down the stretch. That's why the Nets only had a handful of points, you know, to end the game. And that's why the Rockets were able to pull ahead and win. But not being able to do that throughout the entire game is the concern. Because championship caliber teams don't just wait until the end to turn it on. They keep the discipline throughout the entire 48 minutes, which is why even though these leads do consistently disappear in today's NBA, for the teams that are upper echelon defensive teams, they don't let the lead slip away that much. Now, you know, maybe the Bucks will hold, you know, a 20-something point lead and then it'll drop to about, you know, 10 or so. And then they kind of pick back up the focus and they then build up the lead again. The Rockets' concern is that they're letting these leads slip completely away to the point where they are now facing deficits most of the time, where the lead will just completely evaporate. We saw it happen in the Pelicans game at the top of the fourth quarter. Etuan Moore sunk a bunch of three-pointers and suddenly the Rockets were trailing. You come into the quarter leading by 9 and then suddenly you're trailing just a few minutes into the fourth. And it's all off one player who just got hot and the in-game adjustments weren't made. It could have been as simple as nobody rotate off Etuan Moore and that's it. But regrettably, the Rockets aren't getting that from D'Antoni. They're not getting in-game adjustments, whether it's offensively or defensively. And that's been one of the big critiques for Mike D'Antoni. The big issues for him is we constantly talk about his rotations. We talk about his in-game adjustments. Now, I'm not a basketball coach. I'm not. But at the same time, I'd like to think that I can at least voice my opinion on the fact that it seems that there aren't live in-game adjustments being made. And I think that anybody who watches the Rockets, that is readily apparent, because the Rockets will go on these runs where they absolutely cannot score the ball and nothing's being done differently. And I hate the idea that you can just say, oh, just shots aren't going in. Because yeah, you get to a point where if you're consistently getting open shots and they're just not going in, then yeah, you kind of just, you're okay, yeah, shots aren't going in, sure. But there has to be, and we've talked about this on social media quite a bit, there has to be a threshold for where you miss a certain number of shots, or you get to a point in the game where an open three just isn't going to cut it, where you want a higher percentage look. Because at the end of the day, an open three from a majority of the Rockets players is only a 30 to 35% shot. Whereas if you get a shot right at the cup, then that's, you know, a 50% chance of making that shot. And so at some point you have to consider, okay, you're headed into the fourth quarter, you've been playing hard all game, you're running an 8-man rotation, your starters are, at the end of the evening, they're going to be close to 40 minutes. When do you consider, okay, we change up the game plan a little bit, we focus on getting more to the basket, getting to the free throw line, we don't just settle for the wide open threes? Because yeah, the wide open threes are phenomenal when they're falling, but somebody pointed out the other day, and I backed this person up, can't remember who it was on Twitter, unfortunately, But as the game progresses, D'Antoni runs these 8, maybe 9-man rotations. Players get tired over the course of a game. Fatigue is a very real thing. This isn't 2K. This isn't a video game. And even in a video game, even in 2K, fatigue is a factor. So as the game progresses, your players get tired. And what happens as you get tired, as you get more fatigued in a basketball game? You start to lose your legs. And what goes first when you lose your legs? Shooting and defense. And so when it comes to the fourth quarter, I think that would be the ideal threshold, the ideal spot in the game where you kind of look at the team, you look at your lead, you look at who you're playing against. And now if everybody's shooting lights out from three up until the fourth quarter, then don't change anything. But if you've been struggling from three and you're going into the fourth quarter and you're shooting, you know, 30, 35% kind of right at your average, don't expect that average to suddenly just jump up and get better in the fourth quarter. Because again, you've played three quarters of basketball at that point. You're not going to have your legs underneath you. And it makes a little bit more sense to change up the game plan and focus a bit more on driving, getting to the rim, getting higher percentage shots, and having an offense that isn't just predicated on the James Harden ISO or the Russell Westbrook ISO into wide open three-pointers. Because again, that's what we saw against the Nets. We saw a layered offense in the first quarter. We saw a lot of different looks, and that's why Westbrook and Harden were able to score at ease in that quarter. They were running a handful of different options, different plays. It wasn't just pass me the ball, let me ISO, and we'll see what happens. There was a little bit of that, but that's okay because that keeps the defenses honest. It's okay to mix in some ISO, mix in some pick and roll, mix in some pick and pop. If you keep your offense mixed up, the defense will never know what to expect. Rockets did that in the first quarter, and they really did that quite a bit against the Pelicans over the course of about three quarters. I've probably spoken enough about the Nets game. Oh, no, one more point. Westbrook played phenomenal in that first quarter and then just was atrocious in the second quarter. And that was prime best Brook and then worst Brook that I've ever seen, because he couldn't miss. I think he only had one missed shot in the first quarter and then came in and bricked all 9 of his shots in the second quarter. So there's the hope that with Eric Gordon coming back, Westbrook won't feel the need as much to isolate, to keep forcing up those long mid-range jumpers. That would be ideal. Now, will he actually change? We'll see. We didn't get the chance to see Westbrook and Gordon play together, but we did get to see Eric Gordon play. And even though the Pelicans game was a loss, there were some encouraging signs there. Eric Gordon comes back, his first game back as a Houston Rocket, has 20 points, a rebound, 3 assists, he had a steal, all in just 22 minutes, shot 6 of 12, 4 of 7 from the three-point line. And look, Eric Gordon looked good. He looked night and day different from earlier this season. You know, he played 9 games earlier this year and just did not ever look like the Eric Gordon that we are accustomed to seeing. Didn't have the same explosiveness, did not look comfortable out on the court. There were some jokes being thrown around on social media about his size, and he did probably come into the season a little bit overweight. He looks like he's slimmed down a little bit. He looks like the Eric Gordon that we are used to seeing, the Eric Gordon that's going to be your huge scoring punch off the bench, drop in 15 to 20 points a night. He looks like the guy who can be your third best player. And that's important because there are evenings where Clint Capela, you know, depending on the matchup, can be your third best player. He's your defensive anchor. He provides you that vertical spacing in the offense. But Eric Gordon gives you that. Really, he's more of a consistent scoring threat, and he actually gives you a chance for somebody who can actually, you know, quote unquote, go off on any given night. Clint Capela doesn't really have a night where he goes off because Clint's offense is dependent on James and Russ and the other ball handlers on the court to kind of get him these lobs, get him these passes while he's planted on the interior. Eric Gordon can generate his own offense. And so seeing him come back in this Pelicans game and look as good as he did, I expected there to be a little bit of rust. I expected Eric Gordon to come back and have to knock off the rust a little bit, maybe come in, have a few games that, you know, weren't so pretty, but he stepped right back in and picked up. He actually picked up right where he left off, since his last game was against the Pelicans in New Orleans, and he actually played well that game right before he decided to shut it down and go get the surgery done and actually, you know, rehab his knee. So he did pick back up where he left off. He had his, you know, final good game against the Pelicans, had his first game back against the Pelicans, and I was pleasantly surprised. And so it'll be great to see him actually see a healthy Eric Gordon work into this rotation alongside James Harden and Russell Westbrook. James didn't play this game. Russ didn't play this game. Clint didn't play this game. Nobody would have blamed the Rockets for phoning this one in, but they didn't do that. They actually played really solid basketball for about three quarters, and in the fourth, it just didn't materialize. The Pelicans were able to pull away. Etwan Moore turned into prime Ray Allen, and it's a frustrating loss because it could have made up for any number of the other frustrating losses from earlier this season, but that didn't happen. There's still some areas of this game that you can look at and you can be impressed with. You can be impressed with the fact that Gary Clark had an okay game, Chris Clemens had a phenomenal game, and so did Isaiah Hartenstein. Clementine? What's their nickname? Clementine, there we go. Clementine is their nickname, as per Craig Ackerman on the TV broadcast. So we'll talk a little bit more about some of the other elements from the Pelicans game and some topics moving forward with this Rockets squad as we round out the 2019 calendar year, moving into the next decade. So don't go anywhere. Final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Moving into the Rockets loss, unfortunately, against the New Orleans Pelicans, 127-112, dropping them to 22-11 on the season. Now again, this game, the team looked good for about three quarters, but you get into that fourth quarter, and here's the thing, is this team is absolutely built around the idea that at all times you have a Hall of Fame ball handler on the court in James Harden or Russell Westbrook, or in the past with Chris Paul. And so that's a bit of a crutch that Mike D'Antoni has, is he's able to just rely on the talent of his two future Hall of Fame guards and not really actively coach throughout the game as much. You know, we don't really see Mike D'Antoni calling a lot of plays on the sidelines. Now, obviously, his out-of-timeout plays tend to be phenomenal. The Rockets tend to execute really well off those out-of-timeout plays. However, when he's just over there on the sideline, he's usually just arguing calls or just quietly speculating on the game. Hardly ever see him, you know, communicating with the ball handler and setting things up. He gives the players a lot of freedom. Now, that's a double-edged sword when you don't have your two Hall of Fame ball handlers. Russell Westbrook sitting out the second night of a back-to-back for rest. James Harden sitting out because he had the right toe sprain that he suffered in the New Orleans Pelicans, in the Brooklyn Nets game. So without your two main guys, and again without Clint Capella, you really didn't have a go-to guy down the stretch. Now, you can make the argument that you shouldn't need a go-to guy, that the Pelicans don't necessarily have a go-to guy. I would actually argue that Jrue Holiday is their go-to guy, and Jrue Holiday would be very comfortable handling the ball down the stretch for the Pelicans. Lonzo Ball, very comfortable handling the ball for the Pelicans. The Rockets just don't have that, unfortunately, because the ball, again, is in the hands of Harden and Westbrook so often that it was clear. You could see the Rockets, as they started to lose the lead and as they started to fall behind, they faltered a little bit. They got the yips down the stretch because you had to rely on Austin Rivers and Chris Clemens to be your two primary ball handlers. I was kind of hoping going into this game that they would have staggered Eric Gordon's minutes to where he could have played the final, you know, 3 to 4 minutes of regulation. Would it have been a close game? And I still think that as Eric Gordon subbed out with 22 minutes played near the top of the fourth quarter that I think that he probably would have been subbed back in had they been able to cut the lead back down and get it into a manageable margin, but they never really were. They lost the lead and they just couldn't really dig themselves back into it. That fourth quarter was just not great by the Rockets. They were outscored by the Pelicans 41-19. Just not a great quarter, not a great end to a game. It was a fun game to watch, though, for three quarters. I will throw that out there. The Rockets playing a very free style of basketball. Daniel House Jr. had 22 points. Hartenstein finished with 19 points, 9 boards, so a career-high night for Isaiah Hartenstein. We already talked about Eric Gordon's 20 upon his return. Clemens poured in 16 off the bench, along with McLemore, who had 12. So it wasn't really a bad game. Because again, the Rockets could have written this game off and just said, you know what, we're probably going to lose. We've got Eric Gordon coming back in his first game from injury. We're playing three of the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. You know, PJ Tucker doesn't really give you a scoring punch. The 22 from Daniel House I was pleasantly surprised by that. That was pretty cool. 10 of 18 shooting, 2 of 5 from behind the arc. Daniel House was having himself a game, and he looked good. So many of his buckets came from drives to the basket. He scored 8 different times inside the three-point line. Normally, House is just relegated to being a catch and shoot three-point shooter or one of our only 2 3-and-D guys. So to see him be able to kind of expand his game a little bit, it'd be nice to see him work some of the elements of this game into his game when Harden and Westbrook are back. Because again, when the Rockets' offense is simply just pick and roll into a drive and kick into a wide open three, it's great when the threes are falling. It really is. It's one of the most unstoppable offenses in the league. There's a reason they are second in offensive rating right behind the Dallas Mavericks. That number may have actually changed, but I'm pretty confident they're probably still second. There's a reason that that offense is so good. It's a great first punch. But when the shots aren't falling, or when your guys start to get tired, it'd be great to switch things up a little bit. And knowing that Daniel House is comfortable driving to the rim and finishing at the rim, that's huge. We've seen him finish at the rim, but never as much as he did in this game. And then Isaiah Hartenstein, he's the guy that we'll kind of wrap things up on. I think it's a foregone conclusion that Gary Clark will probably make it past his guarantee date. It's not like Gary had, you know, a pair of phenomenal games here this weekend with the Nets and the Pelicans, but we've seen what Gary can provide to this team. So I don't think there was ever any question as to whether or not Gary Clark would make it past his January 7th guarantee date for his contract. Now, Isaiah Hartenstein, on the other hand, at times found himself buried on the bench, not getting significant minutes. But I think that what you've seen out of him, he can consistently provide. And he goes out there and he plays hard. And the broadcasters talked about this. James Harden talked about this post-game after the Nets. Hartenstein goes out there and plays hard every possession. And hustle is absolutely a skill in this game. And kind of segueing a little bit away from Hartenstein, who again, he 19 points, 9 boards, 4 assists. He was passing the ball well. Hartenstein can be your backup 5 and not lose the size advantage that Clint Capella gives you. And obviously, situationally, you'll switch things up. You'll still use the tuck wagon lineup a little bit. Maybe you'll run Gary at the 5 a little bit, depending on matchups. But it all depends on Mike D'Antoni's willingness to expand his rotation to the full 12 guys instead of just relying on 8 or 9 guys. When shots aren't falling, throw Chris Clemens in there for a little bit. See if he can suddenly catch fire off the bench. If you need another big, and Clint Capella's gassed, and Tyson Chandler's not available. In fact, I think Isaiah Hartenstein should be playing over Tyson Chandler, honestly. He's spry. He'll still make some young player-type decisions, but that's bound to happen. And unless he gets real NBA minutes, he's not ever going to break out of those, you know, kind of youthful moments. Like, what comes to mind immediately is the fouling a three-point shooter at the end of the Pelicans game. You know, there's no reason for him to do that. but that's what's going to happen. You have to let those young players kind of grow out of those mistakes. But segueing a bit away from Hartenstein and just kind of overall to how that Pelicans game felt, these young guys, and I mentioned this earlier this season in the win against the Minnesota Timberwolves. It was another back-to-back earlier this season. It was Pacers first, Timberwolves second, and the Rockets had to rely on Chris Clemens and Isaiah Hartenstein heavily in that Timberwolves game as well. And I will die on this hill. You can use the youthfulness of these rookies and kind of layer it with the savvy veteran leadership of some of your older players and have a better product on the court. Because again, guys like Hartenstein, Clemens, Clark, they play with a lot of energy. They play with a lot of hustle. They play with a lot of want to that maybe some of your veteran players don't have on every single possession. Now, obviously, when the game's on the line down there, you know, down the stretch at the end of the game, yeah, players are going to dial it up a notch and focus in a little bit more. But those young guys, they play with hustle and energy on every possession. And so if you're layering those guys around, rather than just getting to a game like this or a game like the Timberwolves where you have to rely on them for the entire game, imagine if there had been spurts of this game where you rely on the young guys, and then at the very end, as you cruise into the fourth quarter with a lead, you don't have to rely on the young guys anymore. You can rely on your veteran players to close the game out. You can rely on your James Harden, your Russell Westbrooks, your Eric Gordons if he's not on a minutes restriction. That wasn't the case in this game, obviously, because Harden, Westbrook, Capella, they were all out due to, you know, miscellaneous minor injuries or rest. But in a regular game where you've got everybody available, rather than run your guys into the ground with an 8 or 9 man rotation, you can spread the minutes around a little bit more evenly. And you never know. If you give Chris Clemens a chance to check in the second quarter and get a few shots up, even just give him 5 or 6 minutes, then maybe he comes in off the bench and drops in, you know, 3 or 4 3-pointers in a row. But you'll never know. This Morey ball system is really designed with the amount, with the volume of 3-pointers that the Rockets get on any given night. This system is designed for anybody to have a career high on any given night. It just depends on who's getting the shots. But if you're limiting yourself to just an 8-man rotation like Mike D'Antoni so often does, even when he has more bodies available, then you're losing out on the chance for one of those other players to come in off the bench and to have a phenomenal evening. We've seen it a lot over the years. We've seen it with, you know, in the past, Trevor Ariza will have a good game. Gerald Green will have a good game. Chris Paul will have a good game. It used to feel like on any given night, there were 5 or 6 or even 7 different guys in Rockets Red who could go off and have a 20-plus point evening, because of the fact that the Rockets shoot so many threes and they generate so many wide-open looks. But these days, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like it's James Harden dropping in 40, and then you're hoping that somebody else is going to put in another 20 or 30, and then the role players kind of hit their shots. And right now, that dynamic is it's James and then it's Russ, and then you pray that the role players are actually going to hit their shots. Now, with Eric Gordon coming back, that does give you another guy who's got, you know, the ability to go off on any given evening. So that'll be a huge boon to this Rockets squad. But as it stands, this Pelicans loss isn't a bad loss. I'm not super upset by this loss. I kind of went into the game with the idea that they would probably lose. As soon as we heard that James Harden wasn't playing because of the right toe sprain, I was like, you know what? Okay, it's fine. 22-11 is not a bad spot to be at. As far as standings go, where are they at? Standings. Or the ESPN website could just not pull up the thing. There it goes. Goodness. Okay, here we go. I don't know why ESPN's website's being so weird. Okay, in the West, they're sitting in the 4th seed. You're now a half game back of the Clippers, you're a game and a half back of the Nuggets, and you're 4 games out of the first seed behind the Lakers. Still not a bad spot to be in. You're a half game ahead of the Mavericks, and you're still squarely in that pack of teams that are right behind the Lakers. Nuggets, Clippers, Rockets, Mavericks. And you've got 2 big games coming up. the Nuggets game here on New Year's Eve, that game is critical because you've already got one loss against the Nuggets so far this year. So as far as any head-to-head tiebreakers moving down the line, I want to say the Rockets play the Nuggets only three times this season. So there will be a clear-cut tiebreaker there. So this game is huge. It is here in Houston at the Toyota Center. And so if you win against the Nuggets, you are only a half game back of them. Love those head-to-head in the matchups because it not only does it give you a win, it puts another loss in the loss column for that team. So you jump forward and get closer to them by a whole game instead of just half a game. So that game's going to be really important and a pretty big test. I would imagine that James Harden plays that game. I think that the main reason that he sat out for the Pelicans was to be ready to play on New Year's Eve. We know James, he's a baller, and he likes to show out, especially around the holidays. He likes to have himself some pretty big Christmas games. He's had some really big He's had some really big New Year's Eve games in the past, and so I would imagine that James does play that game. Westbrook will obviously play that game. Capella, not sure where that heel injury is at. He was, you know, doubtful for the Nets game as well as for the Pelicans game. So I would assume that he'll be fine. He was playing on the heel originally, and then it just, I guess, the situation worsened and he wasn't able to play on this back-to-back. But that Nuggets game is huge. And then right after the Nuggets, you've got the Philadelphia 76ers. So two really big tests right here around the new year, rounding out the new year. And seeing the Rockets play against these two teams with their fully healthy squad, ideally. Again, we don't know where Clint Capella's at, unfortunately, but I'd assume James plays. We know Russ will play since he was just sitting out for rest. And we know Eric Gordon will play, but he'll probably be on a bit of a minutes restriction. It'll be great to see how this team fares, especially because they were making the changes down the stretch against the Brooklyn Nets. They looked good for three quarters against the Pelicans with all their young guys playing. So this was the moment that I've been excited for all season, was getting Eric Gordon back, getting a fully healthy roster together, and getting a true idea of what this team can look like. So I think that's where we'll wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. The website, LockedOnRockets.com. And of course, our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. Ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, you can just let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that go straight to your inbox before they show up on the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Monday, December 30th, as we round out the year of 2019, the entire decade for that matter, this is where we break. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.